You know, more than the crime desk can cover news outside of Salt Lake City. I'm Representative Mike Winder.
Does your vote really count? We're going to talk about ranked choice voting. I'm State Representative Rebecca Chavez-Houck on the political left.
Hillary Clinton speaks out about the election. Is anybody listening? I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. But first, this news. Good morning. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the Political Center. I'm so happy to be joined in the studio today on the political left, Rebecca Chavez-Houck. Welcome to the studio, Rebecca.
Thanks, Natalie. Good to be here.
Nice to have you here. And on the political right, and sitting in for Dan McKay, is Mike Winder. Welcome, Mike.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Nice to have you. Want both of you to take just a second and just introduce yourself a little bit to listeners. You haven't been on the show recently. And tell us about your district you represent and anything else you want to do to just introduce yourself to listeners.
Super. So, again, State Representative Rebecca Chavez-Houck. I represent House District 24, which is the downtown area of Salt Lake City, Avenues, Federal Heights, the Capitol Hill area. I always like to introduce people to the Capitol saying, welcome to my district.
I love it. I love it.
So, but I've been in office since 2008 and really do enjoy representing my district.
I think it's so wonderful that you represent such a vibrant and important part of our state.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Downtown Salt Lake City.
I'm truly honored and privileged.
Yeah, that's good. Mike, how about from your standpoint?
Yeah, I'm a freshman representative, Mike Winder, out from House District 30 in West Valley City. Not new to politics, though. I served a term as on the city council and then as mayor of West Valley City, Utah's most ethnically diverse city, second largest city. I tell my out-of-town guests it's kind of the scrappy blue-collar cousin of Salt Lake. You know, during the Olympics, they had figure skating, and out in the West, we had ice hockey. So
yeah.
Great to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you both. We have a lot of things to talk about today, but let's just talk and get it right out of the way. Any last comments? I hope it's the last time we have to talk about on this show about what has happened at the University of Utah in recent days and in the news. I'm obviously employed by the University of Utah, work for the David Eccles School of Business. But I think since we've got you two on, I'd love to just hear your take. What did you see? What happened?
Well, I've talked to a couple of people and said, as adjunct for the University of Utah MPA program, I think this is a case study on not how to handle a dismissal in an administrative level. And I think all players concerned have learned a lot from it, mm-hmm. sadly. The outcome is what it is, but I think it was they've handled it quickly by
the recovery was quick.
The recovery was quick, and the way they handled it is one way that one would be it would look at it as a textbook resolution. So,
Mike, as I go to you on this, and you'll be able to do this honestly. We're good friends, but you've had a recovery before.
Sure.
Give us your take on this.
Yeah, you know, y'all stumble and you get yourself up and keep going in life. And I think when you look at Vivian Lee and you look at Dave Pershing, they have had such remarkable careers and done so many good things that I hope they're remembered for all the good things they've done. Mm-hmm. When you look at the student experience as President Pershing's tried to create,
it's
at
unbelievable.
The
LaSalle
Studio.
He's changed that culture.
Oh, yeah, just amazing.
Yeah.
And Vivian Lee, I mean, she's been aggressive, and when you're aggressive sometimes and courageous and creative, you make mistakes sometimes. But I think they're great leaders who, as you said, didn't handle this probably the best way, but they did have a quick recovery, and as a Ute alum, I'm optimistic for my alma mater that they have their best days ahead still.
Yeah, and we know that that's the truth with the University of Utah. It's a phenomenal, extraordinary entity in this town, and it will continue to do great things.
Definitely.
Let's go up to Capitol Hill for just a minute and talk about the news that we received that Justice Christine Durham was stepping down after 35 years. Am I right mm-hmm. On the Utah Supreme Court?
Yeah.
What a legend.
Yeah. Have you guys had a personal experience with her? Or Rebecca, is there something you could share that would help our listeners get to know her a little
bit? Well, I remember that way back when I was working for the Utah Girl Scout Council, and we were honoring former Girl Scouts who had, made it, who were making an imprint on our community and our society. And that was probably shortly after her appointment to the court. And I remember, encountering young women who were just amazed by what this meant mm-hmm. And were really really excited about meeting her and to know that she had that experience as a Girl Scout and took those leadership skills and qualities to the bench. And so, she's just been an incredible person to work with or to observe from afar, actually. Our branches don't really interact with each other, but it's been great to see her as an example of on the court as a woman and as somebody who is really highly respected by those with whom she serves, mm-hmm. And by others who have encountered her in the many years. So wish her the very, very best in her retirement. She will be missed, but she has made her mark.
Yeah, legacy's there. Mike, have you had some interaction with
a little bit, not as much as Representative Chavez Houck, but it's been impressive to watch her. You know, as a father of two daughters, it's important that our girls and our women have role models in political leadership, and
yeah.
Utah does so many things right, and one of the things we can improve on is more women in those leadership positions.
Yeah. I have this fun memory of being up in Governor Leavitt's office when he was stepping down to become EPA administrator, and the Lieutenant Governor, Arlene Walker, was being sworn in, and it was this moment in the governor's office when we looked at each other and we realized that a female chief justice would be swearing in the first mm-hmm. female governor of our state. It was just sort of
powerful.
Just a neat
powerful.
Feeling. Yeah, it was just a neat feeling. What about, let's talk, Mike, you've worked a lot in local government. Rebecca, you're certainly someone who follows Salt Lake City politics quite closely. Mm-hmm. We've got two members of the city council that are stepping aside. They won't run again.
Mm-hmm.
And this, we're speaking of Stan Penfold and Lisa
just
Adams.
Just recently hearing about Lisa. So I knew, more earlier that Stan wasn't planning on running, and he's already served the two terms. And so I think it's for him, it's an issue of time, of other commitments, mm-hmm. and totally dedicated to our district. Our districts overlap. We share the
constituencies.
Some constituencies mm-hmm. in the Capitol Hill and the Avenues area, Federal Heights area of my district. So have worked really closely together, to do the transportation improvements around the Capitol, the streets and the stoplights there, the beautification of the streets there. And that was a partnership with Salt Lake City that the state did, that Stan brought that opportunity for us to consider. And so I've really enjoyed working with him. It's great when you have a colleague at a local jurisdictional level. Lisa, newer to the game, but I'm actually very sad to see both of them go.
They're great elected
officials, both very attuned to their constituents' concerns and good listeners.
Yeah.
You know,
Mike, comment there.
Yeah, Lisa was saying just this week, I believe on this station, how she's the only one on that council that doesn't have another job on the side. And so this has been her full-time job. And my kudos to them and to anyone in government, because you don't do this to get rich. You don't do this for the money, especially at the local level. It is a grind, and the glory to work ratio is pretty skewed. So
So
kudos to them for their service and for others who will step up.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. One more local government issue before we go to break. Salt Lake County, they're talking about having more jail beds, and specifically to alleviate some of the issues in the Rio Grande neighborhood. Mike, is this a positive step in your judgment?
Absolutely. For too long, it's been catch and release because our local law enforcement will bring them into the county. There just hasn't been the beds for the more minor offenses, and so people are flaunting law enforcement there. So kudos to Sheriff Jim Winder working with the Salt Lake County Council on a plan to address that.
Any relationship there?
He's Dad's cousin. He's the Democrat side of the family, but still a great guy.
Full disclosure.
In fact, I vote for him because milk is thicker than water or something like that.
I love it. Rebecca, you guys are having a lot of agreement, but I'm guessing think this is the right thing.
The Rio Grande area is ground zero in my district.
It's in your district.
It's in my district, and so it's very important to us, and I've been hearing concerns both from our local public safety enforcement officers of the city and from neighbors and constituents that have been frustrated with the catch and release concerns. So I'm glad that it seems like everybody's starting to put skin in the game. We have, as the state, the county is, the negotiations that occurred between the other counties that will be taking some of our inmates, and then we'll allow for some more room to put these people in that are picked up for more challenging concerns.
You're great. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined in the studio by Rebecca Chavez Houck and by Mike Winder. In our next segment, we'll talk about some very interesting things dealing with Representative Chaffetz's foot. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For podcasts of more local shows and lectures, follow us on iTunes or visit the Local Shows tab at kcpw.org.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Chavez-Halcom on the political left.
And I'm representing Mike Winder, a little bit right of center.
I'm Natalie Gochner in the political center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. So great to have Rebecca and Mike in the studio with us today. We do a lot of talking on both sides of the aisle, but we'd love to have you be more part of the conversation. What headlines caught your eye this week? Any political policies, procedures that need explaining? So we want to invite our listeners to post your questions or comments to our Facebook page at KCPW 88.3 or email us comments at kcpw.org. We'll try to work them into future shows. And we have a question from this past week. And interestingly, the listener question came from Samantha. She said, please discuss HB 349, ranked choice voting. Why did it fail in the Utah Senate? And leave it just to our luck. Rebecca, were you the sponsor of this bill?
I was the sponsor of the bill.
So we can,
I'm like going, I couldn't have planned that better.
We can answer your question. Samantha, the mic is yours.
Right. So, you know, we got it through the House with a resounding amount of support. 12-59, and it was incredible. The challenge in the Senate was it's a new idea for many folks, and so trying to understand what ranked choice voting is, which is in essence allowing voters to rank all of the people on the ballot before them, first through however many number of people there
so
are.
So you go to the ballot, and if the three of us are on it, you just say, Rebecca
won. Natalie second, Mike third, or
thanks
whatever.
Thanks a lot.
Women at the top.
Thanks a lot.
Somebody had to be last. I should have put myself last. But anyway, that's what you do. And then it's tabulated. And then the lowest number, the person has the lowest number of votes, their second choice gets moved up to the other two people until you have somebody that gets at least 50% plus one. And
this passed the House.
It passed the House, and so it went to the Senate.
That's because we're smart in the House,
we
right?
We got it. People got it. There were no questions, and we flew it through the House. It's been utilized by in Utah County particularly, but the Republican Party has used it here in Utah a number of times internally for runoff races for party officials. But for us Democrats, it's a new thing. A number of the clerks are concerned with administratively how this would be implemented, especially with vote-by-mail ballots. They're trying to figure out the size of the ballot, what types of things would need to be done administratively and operationally to be able to do an election. So those concerns by the clerks were brought up very ardently when I presented in committee in the Senate. Although it was tied, it was a tied vote, and so it went down 3-3. So the conversation continues, and I think the Samantha is right on mark in terms of the prospects that exist for ranked choice voting, providing more fair elections. We find in cities like Minneapolis, Berkeley, and San Francisco, where it's been implemented, that the races are less hostile because people have to appeal to a broader number of voters when you look at ranked choice voting, because if they don't put you down as one, maybe they might put you down as two or three.
So you've got to make friends.
You've got to make friends. You've got to appeal to the broadest base of voters that you possibly can. The other reason that I brought the idea forward was because of the polarization that we saw in last year's presidential election. Felt it was a good opportunity to talk about this idea. And Maine just passed an initiative, a ballot initiative last November, that will move them towards doing ranked choice voting statewide. So it seemed like an interesting idea.
An idea we'll see again.
An idea we'll see again. And hey, why don't we look at it for a special congressional?
Let's go there. But before we do that, Mike, you supported this bill.
Absolutely.
And your main rationale for that?
I think voters get voter fatigue when there's election after election after election. And I think this is an elegant way to respect the democratic process and yet have everyone's voice be heard. It's a way to keep campaigns positive. And it's a way to streamline the system. Our election system, when the state constitution came out, was just a few weeks long. Mm-hmm. Now it's a 10-month slog. And I think there is some fatigue on both candidates and voters, and they'd rather handle it in a modern, elegant way, which this is. So kudos to the good representative here.
So we have our representative Chaffetz, who has had this foot surgery. We got to all see a picture of his foot with all the screws in it. It looked painful.
It was a pre-existing condition, I heard, but he
covered by Obamacare.
Yeah, I'm glad it was his foot, not some other part of his body. But however it goes, there is a major rift occurring in the Republican Party right now, Mike. I'd love to ask you to comment on, and it's over if he does step down early, How do we pick the next person? And as I understand it, the governor gets to set the conditions of an election, a special election, and gets to decide how that works. And he wants to follow existing law and have it follow the count my vote thing, where you can be on the ballot if you do signatures or go through your party process. And there's a whole bunch of people in the legislature that don't want to do it that way. They want the party elite to select this spot.
Well,
Tell us your thoughts.
The answer may be somewhere in the middle. The problem with going just purely with what the governor initially said is, we know how to run elections, is let's say Representative Chaffetz resigns in June, which is the current rumor out there. If you go through that process like we normally do beginning in January, you wouldn't have an elected representative until April. And that would be a huge disservice to the people of Utah and the 3rd Congressional District specifically. And I'm also a bit offended, frankly, when the governor's office says, because there's some in the legislature that may be looking at this seat, therefore they wouldn't be able to fairly put a structure together. Because I trust...
He's saying there's some self-interest.
You know, but there's enough in the legislature that would balance that, right?
Yeah,
I mean, we have 75 in just the House, and people knowing that there's those egos, we would come up with a fair process and way. And I think even that way, maybe it would still involve signatures. I wouldn't throw that out. In fact, I would say that's the law of the land now, so we should try to incorporate that somehow.
Yeah.
And so the answer is somewhere in between.
Interesting.
I would love a special session where we could put together a compressed times table so that the 3rd District does have a congressman.
Yeah, Rebecca,
from the left. Yeah, I think the compressed schedule, I think the issues we need to take into consideration are our military and overseas voters. There's a lot of complexity in terms of administering elections that if we were to compress it, would really need to be taken into consideration that because that's going to affect our local elections officials, time of year, making sure that people have a time to know who the candidates are. I do think process-wise that it's appropriate for the legislature to look at this. And we actually did pass legislation, just didn't make it back to the Senate in time to get passed. I wish we had, because then it would be resolved.
Yeah. And if the HB 349, the ranked choice voting, had passed, it could have helped here?
I think so. I think you could have explored doing this. To be honest, no. We would have had to substitute it because the implementation date wouldn't have started until 2019. We were going to start it with the first municipal elections to give the clerks time to catch up.
There is so much election news out there.
And
just because you guys are in the political inside and that's part of the intrigue of this show, what rumor do you believe about Representative Chaffetz? In other words, the prevailing wisdom is that he's going to be offered a lucrative spot on Fox. And that he will have his own show.
He is a talented communicator, and it wouldn't surprise me at all if something like that happened. I think that's where he did his best work, is using that bully pulpit that a congressman does have and making some hay with
it. But you don't have any inside information you're willing to share with our listeners.
If I did, I
probably
wouldn't
share it. Rebecca?
You know, I think that we all know that when you're in politics, it's better to go on a high than a low. And I think that as the oversight committees of the various congressional chambers navigate some of the challenges with the concerns with whether Russia had any involvement with our previous election, that would have been more and more challenging for our congressman as long as he stayed as chair of at least the House Oversight Committee. And so, In all honesty, I think he's leaving why on a high. I mean, as high as you can. And there was some complexity looming ahead. So that's my take on it.
Well, he really was in a lose-lose situation as chairman going forward in this Trump administration.
Yeah.
So I think he played his chess correctly, I think. We'll
get
see how it plays
going
out.
Is good.
I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm in the Political Center. I'm joined by Mike Winder on the right and Rebecca Chavez-Hauck on the left. I want to ask you guys about Hillary Clinton and her interview this week that she finally opened up about the campaign. And she took full responsibility for her election loss. I think that was really clear. But there were also a lot of very strong statements made about Russian interference, about the FBI director, and basically about discrimination. Mm-hmm. Rebecca?
Well, you know, it was listening to some coverage of the testimony in the Senate committee, the Oversight Committee, asking about protocols of how information is shared when There's an investigation going on, and I think that there was straying from that protocol, and it affected our election. It definitely did. I think that anybody that thinks that the information that was released from the FBI and the WikiLeaks and all of that, that happened the 2 weeks before, when I was having so many conversations with people that were still on the fence, pushed them off the fence in the wrong direction, in my opinion. So I think that there is a lot to be said for that. It was an interesting, perfect storm, something that I don't think we've ever seen, and the details of which we will hopefully find out with some clarity and in months to come, and hopefully some resolution of, you know, understanding what happened there. But I saw it as a perfect storm. There were so many things at play that unfortunately played out the way they did.
Yeah, Mike.
You know, I think having Hillary Clinton come out and speak again publicly was in some ways a reminder to so many why they didn't want her as president. She was not connecting with the American people. And Donald Trump connects in a very unique way with a certain segment of the population. But it's shocking to me how polls are showing, poll after poll, 98% of those that voted for Trump would do so again. Only 85% of those that voted for Hillary Clinton would do so again. Mm-hmm. And so say what you will about the current president. He is there, and it was an interesting number of circumstances that lined up. Every election has different circumstances, that if the election was a month earlier or a month later, it could have been a different outcome. And but seeing Hillary back in the public eye and hearing her was a reminder to me of how she just was not connecting with people.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
She connected with me. And I think she connects with a lot of people. I mean, it may be, I mean, there's 3 million voters over and above what we have.
She may have mentioned that, actually.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the votes are the votes, and the Electoral College is the Electoral College. But for those of us that were a part of the 3 million, her expertise and what she says resonated with a lot of us.
I would have rather seen Natalie Gochner as president.
Okay.
But, you know.
Well, I will, you know, I'm not a big Donald Trump fan, but we did avoid a government shutdown, which I'm really pleased to see.
There's that. Good for our national parks as we head into tourist season, right?
Yeah. Hey, and we had this Interior Secretary, Ryan Zinke, is that how we say his name?
Yeah. Zinke? Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Visiting with the San Juan County Commission. You know, obviously there'll be some connections with the Native American tribes and whatnot, but wow, what an interesting time for public lands.
And good for him, and good for this president to take a closer look at those monuments and try to figure out what is the best way, because we love our public lands. We want to protect them, but should it always be from Washington, D.C., or can we, heaven forbid, trust us here in Utah to do the right thing to protect those lands?
The divides are large. Rebecca, you want to add anything
Well,
there?
As someone that has an affinity for chamber work, I listen to some of the local chamber individuals who have felt that the monuments, especially Grand Staircase Escalante, has been a boon for that community. Mm-hmm. And so if we're listening to voices, I'm just hoping that a wide diversity of voices, not only the tribes, but business leaders and others in the community, that's the way it is with those of us that are in office. You have to weigh competing concerns, and I just hope everyone has a chance to really voice them.
Rebecca, this came across my desk yesterday. It was the Escalante Boulder State Chamber.
Mm-hmm.
And they've written a nice little piece, a page and
Precisely.
A half
that's
of
what I was
their
alluding
feelings
to.
About the monument. Mm-hmm. And this was a business group saying, mm-hmm. we're okay.
And I worry about our school kids. We have school trust lands that were taken without mm-hmm. compensation, and it's a mess. And hopefully, a closer look at it can sort some of those things out.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Any quick prediction? Like my prediction would be that the Bears Ears is going to get a little bit smaller.
And I would agree with that. I mean,
yeah.
It won't be the size of Delaware when it's done.
It'll still be there, but smaller. Rebecca, prediction there?
Well, it's hard for me to say. I'm hoping that we can retain, especially with Grand Staircase Escalante, that's been in place for 2 decades.
Yeah.
It just seems to me like such a backpedal on that.
Yeah.
So.
Mike, time to go to gripes. You're a very positive person. I bet you have to think hard to have a gripe.
Oh, no, there's always something to gripe about, but I am positive. My gripe is that the Utah media doesn't see beyond Salt Lake City. For example, Lisa Adams, Stan Penfold, bless their hearts, they're great, they're finishing their terms. But hello, the race in this state that the most people will vote for, barring a special congressional election, is the re-election of Ron Bigelow in West Valley City, and there's a heated race there. Tom Dolan, Mayor of Sandy's up. There are a lot of races going on where more people will vote in them than in these little Salt Lake Council races. So my gripe is there's a bigger world beyond Salt Lake City in Utah politics.
Yeah, welcome to KCPW, because they go to 21st South, and then Moab.
No, we've got some good fans in West Valley. I listen to KCPW. You know, we're out there. It's more than Salt Lake. That's my gripe.
Rebecca, you got a gripe?
You know, I wish we could have talked a bit about the healthcare plan. I mean, there's big stuff going on in D.C., and it's going to impact if the proposed proposal goes through, the proposed bill goes through. There are so many thousands of Utahns that are going to be adversely affected by concerns with their pre-existing condition coverage. I'm hoping that the conversation continues, that we can hear those people's voices related to their concerns and look at good improvements that could occur to Obamacare.
Yeah. My gripe concerns healthcare. So we've got two healthcare gripes, but mine is the doctor shortage and this notion. I know of people who have not been accepted to medical school or have been put on waiting lists, and they're just outstanding people who would have such great, so much to offer in healthcare, and their bedside manner would be so great. And it feels like there's this artificial, you know, restricting. This is the economist speaking, right?
Oh,
that
we
artificially, you know, keep supply low and prices high. I mean, I know that's not exactly accurate, but I would sure like to see more doctors, because every time I go to get an appointment, it's a 6-week wait. Doesn't make sense.
No, it's a good gripe.
Good gripe. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. Mike Winder on the right, Rebecca Chavez-Hauck on the left. I'm in the political center. Ross Chambliss produces the program, and Emily Means has been at the controls. Thanks for listening. Thank you.